This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:07 in the evening, and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. And as mentioned today on the show, we are going to be focused on World Refugee Day. So it's a day that is observed internationally on June 20th and is dedicated to raising awareness about refugees and human rights worldwide. So we wanted to do our own small part in this. We're going to be speaking with a refugee to understand his journey, what it's like to live and work here, as well as his hopes and dreams for the future. Now, before we get to that, though, we did want to take a step back and look at the bigger picture. So the refugee issue is no doubt a long-standing one. Here in Malaysia, refugees like the Rohingya started coming as early as 1981, according to Human Rights Watch. And most of them, of course, were and are escaping systematic violence and persecution. Currently, there are around 101,000 refugees who are registered with the UNHCR, with a total of 177,800 refugees from around the world. And beyond Myanmar, we also have communities from Pakistan, Yemen, Palestine. The list goes on. And whether they've come here to escape war, unemployment, or sexual abuse, they've done so in search of a better life. And that could include finding a job, going to school, or simply trying to start over. Recently, of course, they've made the headlines for unfortunate reasons. There were raids in May when more than 2,000 undocumented refugees and migrants were taken and put in detention centres. And that came despite government assurance that none of them would face arrest if they came forward and got tested for COVID-19. And now it looks as if many of those people are going to be returned to their countries. And beyond what we see in the news, I think it's important to look at how refugees actually shape everyday life and, you know, everyday encounters with Malaysians, because we have refugees who are entrepreneurs, others who are community leaders, others who are teachers. And there are those, as mentioned, who work in NGOs to run school for refugee children, help women recover from domestic abuse, and the list goes on. So we just wanted to look, I think, a little more closely at, it's very easy to think of any group of people as a monolith, as a singular group, and not actually look at the individual stories and experiences that exist within that and that inform what a group might be asking for. And so in light of that, we're going to be speaking directly with a refugee, with Omar Al-Kamash, who is the Deputy Director of Gatanyo Malaysia. And that's going to be coming up right after this. If you have any thoughts on Malaysia's treatment of refugees, really, you can call us and let us know. 7733 2900 is that number. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. All this is coming up after on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:12 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. As mentioned, we are observing World Refugee Day one day early. It's actually observed internationally on June 20th and is a day that is dedicated to raising awareness about refugees and human rights worldwide. So we are going to be trying to contribute to that by actually speaking today with a refugee living here in Malaysia. So on the line with us is Omar Al-Kamash, who is the Deputy Director of Gatanyo Malaysia. Omar, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me here today.
Could you maybe start off by giving us an introduction of who you are and what you do?
My name is Omar Al-Khamash. I'm a senior refugee based in Malaysia. I'm the deputy director of Gatanyo Foundation, also co-founder of Refugee Coalition of Malaysia, and also the first refugee from Malaysia joined the United Nations headquarters in Geneva, the Global Refugee Forum.
Wonderful. So can we maybe start by going back to your life before you came here? What was your life like in Syria?
If I want to describe my life back in Syria, it would be split into two periods of time, before the war and after the war. And when the war started, I was 12 years old, so I don't remember a lot since before the war. I remember that I had a healthy, balanced life. I had my school, my music academy, my sports club. But when the war started, that's when all of the memories of Syria changed between nice, happy land to war zone. When the war started, my memory became from the first stage of the war, when it was only that there's no school trips to the zoo, until it became of 1,000 mortars falling on Damascus on every single day.
And what was it that led you to coming to Malaysia? You know, was there a moment that, precipitated that?
Actually, for leaving Syria, the war came to us step by step. The war didn't come immediately, as one day we slept, the other day we found that the bombs happening. It was first one bomb started every day, and then like two, and then three, until we reached 2,000. And we had the suicide bombers. We had faced really hard issues, but we were accepting it by the point that it was coming to us step by step. Until we like froze for a moment and we realized that it's not going to go any better any soon. It's going to go to worse for the upcoming years. So, and we, of course, we had financial issues. No way to live in a country that you don't have a job to earn your living, and suffering a lot. So we were at the stage that either we die from hunger because we don't have income, or we put the last bit of saving that we have in a flight to leave Malaysia, to leave Syria.
So when you were thinking then about, you know, that moment of taking your last bit of savings, using it to leave the country, was there a preference for Malaysia over other possibilities? I mean, where were you looking at?
Yes, definitely. Actually, there was three options. The first one is Europe, to get smuggled into Europe. But of course, this possible option was cancelled because I was living with my family and my parents are not that young to have ability to walk for more than 2 months. The other two possibilities were, one of them was Malaysia and the other option was Turkey. Of course, we preferred Malaysia for really important reason, that it's language barriers. In Turkey, we have to wait for minimum a year and learn the Turkish language until we have ability to get into the society and get accepted in a job. But here in Malaysia, we already speak English. Of course, not that amazing English, but we have ability to enough language to get into the society. And already we had a relative over here with, who made the road easier for us to pass through.
So what did it take then to come to Malaysia? What was that process and journey like?
Actually, since we decided to leave from Syria to Malaysia, it took us around 15 days from ending everything in Syria and leaving Syria. We had to go through land from Syria because the airport was attacked by the Israeli Air Force. So we just didn't have ability to leave from Syria immediately. So we went through car, through taxi to Lebanon, to Beirut, and from there we had took the flight to come into Malaysia. And it was one of the longest journeys I think any of me or my family had took before. It took us more than 25 hours to reach to Malaysia with the transit.
How did you prepare for leaving your country, especially I think knowing that it would be many years, if at all, before you saw it again?
Actually, that's like really... That's really, really like sensitive question. I won't be telling more of preparing, but more of last moment seeing Damascus, the homeland that I had all of my history in. Like, okay, I left Syria before, but it was more of tourism into Lebanon and Jordan. But I never had like had imagined that I would be forced to leave Syria for security. When I was going in the taxi, the last moment that I'm passing through the road, seeing every corner, remembering my memories in every single street that we're passing through, it was one of the hardest moments I had ever had in my life. And I remember until now what was going in my head is, I'm going to see this street for the last time. I'm not sure when am I going to see it. And almost 5 years, I never saw it again.
And when you did make it to Malaysia, what has it been like adjusting? Have you found it easy or difficult, especially considering that we are a Muslim-majority country?
Yes. Actually, to adjust into the Malaysian culture, it's not as difficult, I would consider it, as interesting experience I had it. Because in Syria, we have mainly one cultural background for the society. When I came to Malaysia, I saw the different cultural background, which was extremely interesting. Of course, it was difficult to adjust myself into getting through the society, into the society. But it wasn't the hardest thing. The hardest thing actually was to get adjusted to the food, even though now I love the Malaysian food almost I have every day nasi lemak. So, but like it was the hardest thing to have like the small ikan, the dry fish. It was kind of hard to understand it, but now I love it.
Yeah, I think food is always going to be one of the biggest barriers for most people.
Yes.
And you talked about the different cultures, but what about the Syrian community? What can you tell us about the Syrian community here in Malaysia?
As you already can see, I love food. So the easiest way to go with the Syrian community is just going to Bukit Bintang or Jalan Ambang, having the best shawarma ever. And honestly, that's the best way that I get along with the Syrian community. Always go to shawarma restaurant and just like get into the society. Which is like, the Syrians here are lovely. They aren't like protective of not allowing people to enter their lives. They are allowing to like build friendship easily.
And what has it been like, so in terms of interacting with locals, you know, have you found, while we're talking about integration, I think, you know, there's food, there's language and there's all that, but there's also sort of daily interactions with Malaysians. What has that been like?
Interaction with Malaysians actually was really, really interesting. For example, I will give you an example in my floor, in my condominium. I have one neighbor Malaysian Malay, one neighbor Malaysian Chinese and one Malaysian Indian. All of them are extremely, extremely sweet to me. In fact, like in last Ramadan, we usually, not last Ramadan, the Ramadan before, we usually like have, in the Syrian culture, we give food on the iftar time to our neighbors and the neighbors give back. And that was the best time I had murtabak in my whole life. And for example, also my Malay neighbor, he was going to Umrah. And I saw him next to the elevator and he told me that I'll make sure to pray for you and your country.
Mm.
That's something that really touched me. Of course, Malaysia is a society, and in every single society in the whole universe, there's people good and people bad. And of course, I faced racism, but it wouldn't be more than 10% of the almost 5 years that I've been in Malaysia. And I would consider it that that's normal, that happens in every single country in the world. But in general, I wouldn't say that it was bad. It was amazing, actually, to live here in Malaysia because the people are really welcoming in, on the day-to-day basis.
What is the interaction like between the various refugee communities that live here? I mean, have you had the opportunity to meet people in other who are in the same boat but maybe came from another country?
Yes. So here in Malaysia, actually, according to my job as a deputy director of NGO work on human rights, of course, I had ability to have access into almost all of the refugees community here in Malaysia. So here in Malaysia, there is different kind of community. There's refugees from Myanmar with a different ethnic group, Burmese speaker and non-Burmese speaker. Also, there's from the Middle East, from Iraq, Syria, Palestine, Iran. Sorry, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and the non-Arabic speaker, there's Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran. I almost got into programs with almost all of the communities. The most important thing I found that every single community have culture that we have to understand and respect in the same time. To find in from the other side, understanding and respecting for my culture. And that, I think, is one of the luckiest things that I had in here in Malaysia that brought me to understand the different cultures. Don't be surprised because it's not your culture what you are seeing. But you have to respect it to gain the respect back.
One of the main issues, I think, when it comes to refugee life here is also securing employment. So maybe you could tell us, how did you secure your current job and how challenging was it?
Actually, when I will go a bit back, when I was a child, I had always my dream to be a pilot. Mm. Like any kid, pilot, engineer, doctor, we already know those jobs that most of the kids have dreamed to be at. Until I came to Malaysia. When I came to Malaysia, I worked in almost every single field. I worked in a restaurant, I worked in as tailman, I worked as tour guide and translator for the Middle Eastern tourists here in Malaysia. And until I got into the point of working in an NGO for human rights, that's when it opened my eyes to see the fact of the people suffering. And that's actually when I decided to change my whole dreams that I had since I was a child. I don't even remember from which year. be working as professionally in the humanitarian field. And I have been working with my NGO for more than 3 years and getting appointed for a higher position every, we can say, few months or 1 year, 2 years. And now I reached the point of deputy director. And I think to secure my job was mainly is to love my job. I love my job. I produce good job. And then I received the reaction of that, which is appreciation and keeping me at the position.
And has the COVID-19 situation affected your work at all?
Definitely. Definitely the COVID-19 affected my work. Actually, first 2 weeks, we were having chilling, resting, sitting behind the laptop and working at home. Until after 2 weeks, we saw the need on the ground to help through food aid. And that's the stage where we had to go to almost every single community, from refugees, migrants, local, and Orang Asli. But for us, it's not about like we are NGO for refugees, we help only refugees. Mm. We should fill the gap for helping people. So we helped over 53,000 persons in 5,000 persons all over red zones, under EMCO area, side by side with the APM. And there was amazing equality for giving the aid for local and foreigner. Doesn't matter if they are migrant, refugee, or any other group. But if we look at what affected me at the work, I worked much, much harder during the MCO period. And actually, I said as a joke to all of my friends, I wish to be quarantined. I want to rest.
No rest for the wicked, they say. But in this case, no rest for people doing good. We do have a message here from Cheng Kiat, who says he loves food. He'll fit right in. So there you go.
Perfect. Amazing.
I did want to just touch on something, which is we started off by talking about the situation in Syria that led you to leave the country in the first place. How has it changed since you left? And, you know, how closely do you follow that story?
Of course, I follow it, but I'm not that person that follows the news a lot on the news. I prefer to follow it on the people on the ground itself. I contact my friends that they are still alive there. I contact my family members that they are still there. And kind of the situation now, the difference between before and now. Before, it was more of violence, war happening on the ground in front of my eyes. And I witnessed so many dead bodies. So many mortars fall in front of me, and I faced this so many times. And luckily, I was one of the lucky people who got out, but many of my friends didn't make it. Now it's more of financial war. Now it's more of economy. The economical situation in Syria, it's not doing well at all. For example, when the war just started, it was $1 equals 53 pound. It reached to 2,500, and then it went down, and it's like really not unstable. So, and of course, like people's salaries are reduced according to the international rate. So, as a financial condition, everything is getting more expensive, and the salaries are getting lower and lower. So, it's more of economy war in my area. I'm not talking about other areas such as Idlib and others, but for my area, I'm from Damascus. Damascus is pretty much economical war.
And Omar, we just have about a minute left to speak with you. So I just wanted to end on this. What are your hopes for the future?
Actually, my hope, I'm already going through it, which is helping more people, but I didn't reach to my target yet. I want to help more people have better access into helping people. I'm already doing that, but hopefully I reach to better and better stage of helping people.
Omar, thank you so much for speaking with us and for sharing your story.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you so much.
That was Omar Al-Kamash, who's the Deputy Director of Getanyo Malaysia, talking to us about his experience and, you know, really his story bringing him to Malaysia from Syria as a refugee. This is our own way of observing World Refugee Day, which is actually taking place tomorrow, June 20th. If you have any stories you would like to share, any experiences or thoughts on the refugee community here in our country, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we head to the news, we do have this from Sue, who says, I want to say to Mr. Omar that I respect refugees. I respect the fact that they had respectable jobs, a happy life, family and friends before leaving their countries. To all refugees, I hope you have more good memories than bad ones in Malaysia. I hope Malaysians will not discriminate against refugees because they do not have a choice. Refugees to me are husbands, brothers, wives, adorable and fun-loving children. We can give them a chance. I think that's a lovely note to end on. So keep those thoughts coming, and we are about to head to the news. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.